Welcome to Modern Practice. I'm your host, Dr. Tom Villanueva. And on this episode, Dr. Robert Cifolio joins me to continue the story about how NYU Langone Health faced off against the COVID-19 onslaught. Robert, while many organizations in this country are just starting to feel the onslaught, you've been in the thick of it from the beginning. What's the biggest surprise you've seen in these past 4 months?
I think the biggest surprise was the amazing resiliency and how 98% of our staff stepped up, put the needs of the patients ahead of themselves and their families because of all the risks and concerns, especially early. Now we know it's not that bad, but we didn't know that then, and put the patients first. And yeah, we can say this is because of NYU, Langone, and leadership, but I think it's a thing about healthcare professionals everywhere, doctors, nurses, APPs, staff members, people that clean the room.
Right.
98% of them are wonderful, incredible people. You can't say it without getting chills in your arms and some amazing, inspirational stories of thousands of people that put the needs of others in front of their own needs.
I couldn't agree with you more. And you mentioned about standing in the shoulders of these people. But many of them also still got sick and had other situations to deal with. How did you deal with that?
Yeah, so I think that's one of the areas we could have done better. You know, we weren't communicating very well with our families. And of course, the family members couldn't be in there. So it took us 10 days, but we innovated and took second and third year medical students who now had nothing to do. Mm-hmm. And we created a family liaisons committee where they would interpret what was happening to the patients, because they're all remote, they're home in Indiana or California, how the patient was doing based on the vent settings and the labs, mm-hmm. and the notes from the doctors based on their mental status. Most of these people were sedated and intubated, and called families twice a day. So that was one of the other innovations that we came up with, which was effective. But, you know, it's not like talking to the doctor or nurse at the bedside. They just couldn't do it. The healthcare providers did not have the time. So about 7 or 10 days in, I said, you know what? You take care of the patients. We'll find another way to communicate to families. And these patients are on a ventilator, of course.
We want to talk about a great way of teaching future physicians on the art of healthcare. This is a great idea.
Yeah, we thought it was great for all areas. One, it was incredible education for early medical students. Two, they were smart enough and I think had the resilience to spend a lot of time on the phone, maybe more than a 60-year-old surgeon on the phone with families.
Right.
And they had great empathy. And they could also interpret the medical lexicon for the families. And so we thought that was a really good initiative. However, I didn't start it soon enough. And sometimes the communication broke down a little bit in that the medical students really didn't know how sick the patients were. They would say, well, the patient's stable, but the guy's on dialysis and 100% oxygen with a PEEP of 15, and then
wow.
On ECMO. And we put 37 people on ECMO. And even though we report the best results in the world with ECMO, it's still a big deal.
So similar to the early episodes of the AIDS pandemic, I saw patients as a young medical student dying alone, and we're seeing that again. Any other way that you mitigated this problem?
You know, Tom, this is a great, great point. It's horrible. And, you know, AIDS and then our fathers before us with TB, all of us put ourselves
right.
at risk to take care of patients, right? We never asked for hazard pay. We said, where can we sign up and help? Because it's our honor. And this has been the greatest honor of my career to serve the doctors and nurses here and the patients. I think what we did, and we had hundreds of patients die. You know, we saw 26,000 in the ER and admitted 7,000 and had hundreds and hundreds of patients die. When we knew a patient was going to die, they'd been on the ventilator for a long time, we allowed family members to come in and to participate in that process. And I understand the rules and the state laws. We put them in PPE and guided them so they were careful. We didn't have a single family member become COVID positive. And then we also, for those that couldn't travel, we set up FaceTimes with iPads in the hospital so they could at least see their loved one. But it's tough to see your loved one on a ventilator with lines and tubes and tape on the face. You know what I mean, Tom.
Mm-hmm. What about in reference to some of the long-term costs to your organizations, whether it be negative or even positive? I can't figure it out being positive.
No, it's clearly negative. This is a huge financial burden when you shut down elective surgery. As you know, the elective surgery with the private payers is the only fuel you put in the tank.
Right.
And that pays for everything. That 3 or 4% of your business pays for all of your margin. And it was all taken away. So obviously we lost hundreds of millions of dollars, but it was to take care of patients. Now we have to tell people and show people it's safe to come back. We're up to over 100% of our outpatient volume, 92% of our inpatient, but our payer mix is worse. And so there's lots of things that we can do to get this better. So yeah, it's been a financial burden. No one expects the government to bail you out. They're not going to. They don't have the money. And I think you're just going to have to tighten your belt, leverage telemedicine that has lower costs, leverage that maybe you need less people in. They can work from home, maybe less real estate. We can get rid of some leases and office space. We've put a hold on some capital projects. We've eliminated vacancies and recruitment. We've put promotions on hold. We've stopped people who are going to start working, and we held their contracts until the end of really July or August. We've thought of many ways to try to make our P&L better. Here's the good thing. We have 43,000 employees here at NYU Langone. And just like Mr. Ken Langone himself would do to his employees, not a single employee got laid off. Not a single one got furloughed. No one got their salary reduced, despite what I just told you.
That's very admirable. What are other ways you're trying to gain patient trust to feel safe to come back into the hospitals or even to some of your other facilities?
Yeah, thank you, Tom, because that's a great question. You know, I think this is an international problem. The numbers of people in the ERs is significantly less. It's down 20 or 30% everywhere. And you're seeing more ruptured appendices, more cardiac ischemia turning into frank infarcts. And the same thing with stroke. People are coming in much later because they're, quote, afraid to get COVID and hurting themselves. So this is a national and international communication campaign. We have newspaper articles, editorials, commercials. I think the AMA should get involved, et cetera. And show the safest place to be is not the grocery store, it's the hospital. That's the safest place to go. We know how to use PPE. We know how to leverage antibodies and PCR nasal swabs. We know who's infected, who isn't, how to protect people. And if you got a health issue, go see your doctor.
I couldn't agree with you more. Actually, in the comment that many of our healthcare facilities are actually safer than your common grocery store.
Absolutely right. I concur.
So as many of our organizations are going to hopefully by the end of August start gearing up for their post-COVID era, and I do put that in parentheses, any other advice for trying to ramp up organizational activities?
Yeah, I think the other thing you need to do is convince your doctors that the hospital's safe, and you need to convince the staff that they're safe. We noticed that a lot of our staff in the office were asking for face shields and masks when they're not patient forward. So if you're not patient forwarding, do you really need a mask to be in your office in the back on a telephone? I don't think so. We want to be smart and protect people, but we also don't want to be paranoid and do things that don't make sense. I'll give you a perfect example. We know that if you get infected with a positive PCR, that there may be 2 or 3 days before you create IgM antibodies. And we know by day 7, you have IgM, and really by day 14, you have IgG. And so you're probably not infectious after that time between the 2nd, 5th, 7th day. I mean, IgM may start on day 4 or 5. So why are we quarantining people for 14 days? Why in God's name are we doing repeat nasal septums and PCR tests on people who are positive when we know you're positive for 30 days? It doesn't mean anything. Why is the NBA and other pretty intelligent organizations requiring or asking to do repeat PCR testing of patients? We know they're going to be positive for 28 days, but they're probably not infectious after day 5 to 7. So we need to do a better job communicating people on what they're doing and why, and interpreting these tests.
Robert, what advice do you have for leadership?
I would just say probably the single most important thing I would tell your leaders in Miami and Arizona and Texas and these other hospitals, it is all about leadership. The leadership and the nimbleness of the organization determines the culture. If the staff members don't think you're listening and you're not communicating well, and believe me, we could have communicated much better. That was one of the other errors that we did. You know, the C-suite always thinks they're communicating, and if you listen to the staff, they'll tell you they're not. So repeated, clear, simple communication and nimble leadership and making policies based on data and not dogma. And finally, protecting the staff, all members of the staff, and letting them know you have their back. That is the key issues, I think, here as these crises now go to other states.
Dr. Cerfolio, thanks so much for taking the time out and joining us for these past two episodes. You've told us a very compelling story that reached many of us during these unprecedented times. And to our listeners, please join us for other Modern Practice podcasts on the Vizient Medical Leadership Channel. Subscribe today, like us, or send us your comments. Also, please listen and subscribe to SG2 Perspectives, the podcast on the latest in healthcare strategies. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. Thanks for listening.